So these are the moments and some of the stories that you definitely need to know about today.
The Saudis, the Emiratis, and the Qataris pleading to Trump serves no purpose. These five regimes can easily say that all American forces must leave.
I would have come out sooner, but I had to call my opponent and concede, and it took a while to find Ed Gallrein in Tel Aviv.
There's a lot of really important stuff happening in our world today, stuff that is almost world-changing, really. Mr. Putin and Mr. Xi's statements, for example, very pointed, very telling. And we're going to go to Beijing live, and we've got a superstar on the issue of China-Russia relations, on what the president's agreed to on this day. We're going to have all of this right here on The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Wow, our coverage of the meetings yesterday where Mr. Putin arrived in China was off the charts. The reaction was kind of crazy from all over the world. Millions and millions of you, when I woke up this morning and I checked X, for example, had watched and had commented. Some good, some not so good. In some cases, downright bad. But it's okay. Everyone's allowed to have an opinion. We're just glad you're there. Okay, let's talk about what's happening now, which I think is one of the most consequential stories to occur in the United States in particular in decades. This is a big story, which culminated last night with the taking down, literally taking down, one of the most honest and forthright politicians in the entire country. Here is that politician. His name is Thomas Massie.
I would have come out sooner, but I had to call my opponent and concede, and it took a while to find Ed Gallrein in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, that's Thomas Massie. There he is. He's a congressman from Kentucky who is one of the few who actually puts his country above money and politics. He's a rarity in that sense. He questioned the war in Iran. He questioned why no one has been prosecuted for sexually abusing the girls that Jeffrey Epstein trafficked. He questioned why the files in the Epstein case haven't been released. He questioned who was funding Epstein. Good questions, right? Well, for asking those questions, last night, Thomas Massie was beaten down, defeated, stopped from being a U.S. congressman. And who took him down? Who did that? Israel took him down. How did they do it? With $32 million. That's how. Let me show you somebody else. This guy here, that's Tony Fabrizio. He co-founded MAGA Kentucky. That's the organization that collected tens of millions of dollars to take down Mr. Massie, Congressman Massie. Who is this guy? Who is this Tony Fabrizio? Guess what? He's the past advisor to none other than that guy. That's Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. His own guy came to the United States to take out Massie. Netanyahu despises Massie, and he wanted him out. So with the help of this guy, the chubby guy with no hair, he obviously was able to interfere in yet another U.S. election. And as a result, one of the few honest men, really, this pains me to say this, one of the few honest men in the U.S. Congress will no longer be serving in the U.S. Congress. Instead, he's going to be replaced by Israel's guy. Literally, Israel's guy. And I got to mention this. Remember when the U.S. media, under the direction of Rachel Maddow and so many others, went bat crap crazy with this made-up story about the Russian election interference? Well, this interference that we're seeing now that I just described to you, there's no Rachel Maddow talking about this. There's no media coverage on this. Nobody's talking about this in the United States, at least not in the mainstream media. In fact, it will likely get no coverage at all in the mainstream media. So all I can say is thank God for the alternative media. Thank God for the bloggers. Thank God for the podcasters. And people like this woman that I very much respect, Anna Kasparian.
This is a foreign country, like foreign operatives meddling in our elections. Like, where are the Democrats, by the way? Like, when it came to Trump and the whole Russiagate thing, okay, which I'm embarrassed that I fell for, they used that for political purposes. It didn't matter if it was true, they used it for political purposes. Here you have an actual situation in which a foreign operative is trying to unseat an American from his congressional seat because he wanted transparency on the Epstein files.
So you know what I want to do? I want to break this down for you because I want to be unequivocal. I want to be super clear about what just happened here. That's how important this is, okay? This guy you see right here, this is the new congressman from Kentucky. He's owned by Israel. Write it down. He got $32 million from Israel, and most of it came from Miriam Adelson, who, as President Trump himself said about Miriam Adelson, she says she loves Israel more than she loves the United States. Mr. Trump said that. The guy on the bottom here, that's Massey, he questioned why we allowed Israel to force us into a war with Iran. And for that question, out of here, he's removed. And by taking this guy out, by taking out Massey, that means Israel now practically owns the entire U.S. Congress. And by the way, you can add to that that they own the White House and almost the entire cabinet, most would argue. Now, here's something I should add. Is it possible that there's a silver lining to all of this, right? Yes, there is. And I'm going to show it to you. Let's put it up right here. Look at this. This is the interactive poll that was taken right after the election last night to determine, so who voted for who, right? This is fascinating. So young people voted for Massey. People 17 to 25, by a 25% margin, they voted for Massey. People 26 to 35, by a 56% margin, they voted for Massey. People 36 to 45 voted for Massey. People 46 to 55 voted for Massey. I mean, look at these numbers, plus 25, plus 56, plus 38, plus 17, right? Now look at the people who voted for the other guy, for Israel's guy, right? The 56 to 65-year-olds, the 66 to 75-year-olds, and the 76-pluses, right? The most, right, in this category. Who are these people? These are the people who watch Fox News and CNN. These people, right? These are the people who watch alternative media, who watch the Anna Kasparians, who watch the Tucker Carlsons. They're younger. It's a different breed. So what this says is, if you look at this picture, is America will very soon be changing as these people kind of move along. And that this picture, this is really important. So let's talk now about the war. The war that's taking place right now in Iran, right? It's beginning to look, at least based on both reporting and statements that are coming out of the White House, that Israel will get what it wants when it comes to Iran, because it appears that President Trump is soon going to continue the war with Iran. At least, you know, by all measures that if one listens carefully to what he's saying and what the other generals are saying, it's going to happen again. And if he does so, it will no doubt expand the war. Why? Because Iran will strike back. You can be sure of that. They've said it about a million times. And it will hit U.S. military bases in Qatar, in Saudi Arabia, in UAE. Why? Well, because as far as they're concerned, the Iranians are concerned, those countries are complicit. They're complicit. And we have to ask ourselves, are they complicit? Right? Here's how Mohammed Mirandi says those countries can prove that they're not complicit.
The Saudis, the Emiratis, and the Qataris pleading to Trump serves no purpose. At the end of the day, if they want to bring about change, they know that they can block any assault from their territory. They are sovereign countries. These five regimes can easily say that all American forces must leave, all of their assets must be removed from our territory, our land, sea, and air cannot be used against our neighbor. They could have done this last time round. They didn't. They can do it now.
It doesn't look like the Saudis are going to pay attention to what he's saying. In fact, there are signs the Saudis are doubling down on their complicity, at least according to this report by Reuters. Pakistan is sending the Saudis 8,000 troops, a squadron of fighter jets, an air defense system they got from China, and maybe even warships. Now, that would be weird, right? Because aren't the Pakistanis the mediators in this thing between the United States and Iran? So why would Pakistan be doing this? Good question. According to Reuters, there are about 3 billion reasons for Pakistan to do this for Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I said 3 billion, because that's how much money the Saudis have, according to Reuters, given Pakistan to pay off its debt and improve its economic condition. What did Smedley Butler say? What did he say? Follow along, class. War is a racket. So let's talk about China now. Mr. Putin and Mr. Xi began the day at the... Here's the picture, in fact. It's pretty cool. The Great Hall. There's the military band playing as the two leaders renewed their conviction to essentially make the world a more peaceful place. The bond between the presidents of these two superpowers seems to become stronger every single time they meet. In fact, I'm going to show you Mr. Putin talking now. And what he says is how Russia and China are working to stabilize the mess that's taking place in Iran.
Trade turnover over the past quarter of a century has grown more than 30-fold. For several consecutive years, it has confidently exceeded the $200 billion mark. The driving force behind our economic cooperation is Russian-Chinese engagement in the energy sector. Amidst the crisis in the Middle East, Russia continues to maintain its role as a reliable supplier of resources and China as a responsible consumer of these resources.
And interestingly enough, I'm going to play for you now Mr. Xi's comments. He's kind of saying something very similar, but he's even more graphic in his reference to what's happening right now around the world, or what he's obviously talking about what the United States is doing around the world. And he calls it the law of the jungle.
This world is far from being calm. The damage imposed by unilateral actions and hegemony is off the scales. It threatens to bring us back to the law of the jungle. In this sphere, I would like to propose the concept of a single fate for humankind and a global initiative that enjoys wide support from the international community, including Russia. As permanent members of the UN Security Council, Russia and China will show themselves as responsible world powers, protecting the authority of the United Nations and the world's justice, countering any manifestation of unilateralism and any attempts at reversing history. We're ready to work hand in hand to form a new, more rational and fair system of world governance. The great Russian-Chinese friendship is in line with the demands of the time.
The demands of the time, and you know exactly what he's thinking about and what he's saying when he says those words, the demands of the time. Joining us now to talk about all this is correspondent Don Corder, who has traveled with Mr. Putin's press corps. He is joining us now from Beijing. Wow, it's amazing to watch this. And I don't know if you heard what I said at the beginning of the newscast. We were covering this live yesterday, Don, as this was happening, as Mr. Putin, in fact, was getting off the plane. And millions of people on social media were watching us and commenting. You know, this is an even bigger story, I think, than we thought. And yet, interestingly enough, one of the pictures that's getting the most attention there in China, let me play this for you and get you to react for this. This is Mr. Putin taking off his jacket, and apparently they're making a lot of hay out of this in China. Can you tell us about what's going on here?
Well, yeah, Rick, I have actually looked at some of the stuff on Chinese social media regarding that. A lot of clarification is going on, you know, because in Russia, essentially, somebody takes off their suit jacket, leaving a car or an airplane. It's sort of an indication that they really feel them like they're at home, you know? It's something that a guy comes home from a hard day at work, and he comes home, he takes off his suit jacket, and he's feeling really comfortable. And that's kind of like capturing the sort of the atmosphere, I guess, that you could say that Vladimir Putin felt when he came to China. I mean, he's been to China many times. I could tell you that I've been here in China with various different Russian delegations, various different Russian politicians, and the welcome is always so warm. They always make the Russians feel nice at home. And this, of course, is no exception. I mean, this is a visit that is essentially a celebration of 25 years of the landmark friendship treaty that Russia and China had signed. So this is an especially important occasion for hospitality and friendship. We saw a little bit, you showed some scenes from the welcoming ceremony by the Great Hall of the People by Tiananmen Square. Of course, that welcoming ceremony was just fantastic. Yeah, the marching band, the military columns, the columns of children cheering on the Chinese and Russian presidents, you know? It's definitely something really special.
You know, you're so right. I said this yesterday when I was watching this. As I watched him get off the plane, one of the first things I said is, he looks comfortable there. You know, we have an expression in America, which you may be comfortable with. When you're playing football or any sport, they say, when you get to the end zone, coaches will say, look like you've been there before. Act like you've been there before. Don't act like you're, yeah. Oh my God, look at me, I'm in the end zone, I scored. No, and Putin, and I gotta say, unlike Trump, looked like he'd been there before. Like, you know, yeah, I'm here to do business, I'm gonna have meetings with the Chinese, and when we're done, hopefully something will get done. It's not about the moment, per se, it's about the process. And yeah, I think that's really important. But there was a process, by the way. I've got another picture I want to show you now. These are the documents, which I think most people are looking at and going, wow, they got a lot of work done. They weren't there to chit-chat. They were to get a lot of work done. Look at these. Look at this thing. These are all the documents that these guys, that they're preparing for them. How many were there, Don?
40. They signed 40 different important complicated documents on joint projects connected to trade, energy, foreign policy, and in all different spheres, really. And one of them, of course, was it was intended on deepening their comprehensive strategic partnership agreement that they've enjoyed for many, many years, decades, in fact, that is basically the cornerstone of their strategic partnership, you know? And like you were saying before, right, a guy takes off his suit jacket, he's feeling comfortable, right? This is something that both President Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin have talked about before. This isn't just a strategic partnership. It's actually a personal friendship between these two presidents. Vladimir Putin comes to China, it's like he's going to his friend's house, you know? And at the same time, they got a lot of business to attend to because, 40 documents, that's a lot of signing.
But these guys, I think they like each other. And even more importantly, they know what their shared task is. Here's a shot of them sitting around drinking tea, interestingly enough. And you do get a sense that they understand what their objective is as two of the leaders of two of the superpowers in this world. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And if you compare that to the kind of scenes that we saw when Donald Trump made his way to China less than a week ago, there wasn't any tea on the table for him when he made it to Xi Jinping's place, you know? I mean, that's just kind of one indication of how relations are a bit different between China and the United States and China and Russia, of course. Russia and China have this long legacy of friendship, and Donald Trump seems to be trying to, butter up the Chinese after tariffing them and trying to use the hammer. Now he's trying to use honey, you know, but it doesn't seem to be working too much for the Chinese. Lots of analysts have said that meeting was not really fruitful.
Yeah, but here's the difference, Don, and you know this, and my guest who's coming up here, who's an absolute expert on this, is going to talk about this in a little bit. The delegation that Russia's sending and the delegation that is receiving them in China, these people have been studying this relationship for decades. It's the same people. They're experts. They've gone to universities to study this stuff. in the United States and in many Western countries, they change their leaders like most people change their underwear. So they show up, and it's not Donald Trump's fault. He shows up in Beijing. He doesn't know anything about the relationship with Beijing because he doesn't really have one. And you know, I think that's a differentiator in this case, don't you?
I think absolutely. You know, I mean, it is really a problem that the leadership in the United States changes so often because it creates the situation that a lot of countries in the multipolar world are upset about, of course, because you make a deal with the United States and you have faith in that deal. You feel that the United States really is behind what they're saying in terms of brokering a deal of some sort. And then that guy that you brokered a deal with is out of office in the next 3 years. Somebody else comes to power with a completely different agenda. It's like people who want to do business with the United States, they cannot predict what their next move is going to be. When it comes to China and Russia, and the two leaders talked about this during this two-day visit, it's stability. Stability is important to reinforce in China and in Russia. This is something that Vladimir Putin's administration has done, Xi Jinping's administration has done. And these are the core sort of common core values that constitute what everybody is talking about when they say win-win cooperation between Russia and China.
That is such a good point, Don. That is such a good point. It, you know, things my father always used to say to me when I was a kid, son, in life, you got to have a foundation. No house will stand without a good foundation. It's everything. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at here. By the way, I think Boris, our producer, was just telling me that there's some new picks coming in. They're not live, but we do have some new picks. Oh, here you go. Here's the latest picks that have been shared with us
of
the president. I think Don, you could tell us what's going on. I think he's getting ready to get on the plane and get out of Dodge, right?
That's right. This is definitely the where the Russian president is saying his goodbyes, but not his farewells to his Chinese friends. Of course, this is the second day of the two-day visit here. So the meetings and the document signing finally came to an end in the later part of the day today. Mm-hmm. So now that's Vladimir Putin in the airport. He's with his delegation. Like you said, again, going back to the sort of complicated exchange between Russia and China, the comprehensive exchange that we've seen in terms of understanding each other's cultures. You know, when they send a delegation to China, right, like this Russian delegation that we've seen this time, we're talking senior ministers, top Kremlin officials, heads of state corporations and banks. These are the most serious people in the country going to their most powerful strategic partner, as Russian officials have pointed out. You know, it's big business.
It's such a differentiator. You're absolutely right. We're so lucky to have you there, Don. Great job, man. It must be, you know, it's pretty cool, isn't it? Sometimes think that we don't pinch ourselves from time to time. There's certain historic moments that we get an opportunity to cover among the drudgery of just covering the day-to-day news from time to time where you feel like, wow, I was there and history was being made. It's a pretty cool thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Being a journalist in the Kremlin pool of journalists is something that's allowed me to see the world, different cultures, and see how multipolar governments interact with each other. It's so different from how the United States relates to a lot of countries in terms of threatening and ultimatums and, you know, putting people in debt. I mean, when it comes to the Russian diplomacy, it's a lot different. Again, it's in the same vein as what the Chinese are looking at around the world.
Yeah,
win-win cooperation. They want common flourishing of countries. We heard that talked about today as well at the meetings. We never hear stuff like that in the Western political sphere.
Yeah, it's solid, it's disciplined, and it's very studied, you know? And you're right.
Yeah.
And you're right. That's make a difference. Don Corder, good job, man. Always great to talk to you, Don. Get back here and I'll buy you a beer or something.
Thanks.
When we come back, here's what we're going to do. We're going to be joined right here on the set by one of the most knowledgeable analysts in all of Russia on the subject of Russia-China relations. Sergei Stanikoyev is a guy who actually forecasts the Asian-Pacific region on behalf of Russia. So we got the right guy. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And there you have it, some of the latest pictures that have been coming into us just a few minutes ago. There is Mr. Putin. He seems to have a little bit of a skip in his step, as we say in America, which means he looks like a man who is satisfied, who feels like this may have been a good mission, a good trip, that some things were accomplished. He's smiling, something he does more than people give him credit for, by the way. But he looks to be like a guy who had a task to do and has essentially completed that task. And now he's going to be getting back on the plane, and he's going to be flying back to Moscow as he waves goodbye to his Chinese friends. There it is. Quite a moment. You know, some people might see this and get some goosebumps as they watch it. This is Sergei Sannikovich. He's joining us now. He's interestingly enough, and this is the way I've been describing you to people because I think it's important. First of all, thanks so much for being here.
Yes.
I'm so glad you're here. This is a pretty cool moment, isn't it?
It's my great honor to be here and to speak with you.
That's so nice. That's so nice of you to say that.
Yes, my great respect to you, personally.
You're very kind. You are, I told my viewers about you a little while ago, and I described you as one of the foremost experts on the Asian Pacific Rim as it relates to Russian relations, and that you actually are the guy who does a lot of the forecasting for what's going to happen in these relations in the future. It's a pretty big job.
Hope so. If you are interesting to, if you want to, me to introduce myself, I would say that I am the member of big team, and you talk right a few minutes ago about this team, that this is really good experts which are working decades of ages together with China. And strategically, you know, this year we celebrate the 30th anniversary of our comprehensive strategic partnership.
Yes.
So all these 30 years we worked certainly for this relationship. And you know, sorry, Rick, but the most important thing, when I hear the phrase, the pivot to the East, I'm so surprised. Why pivot? For 30 years we worked with this East.
Yeah.
So it's not pivot for us. Maybe it's pivot for somebody else who preferred to work with Western, and then now when they have some sanctions, they are going to work with East. This is not stable.
You know what I'm dying to hear from you about? And I don't think I've ever asked this question of anybody, but you were there. You're one of the guys who watched this develop. And here's the truth. The truth is, China-Russia relations have not always been good. In fact, they used to be horrible. And somewhere along the line, something happened, and what was once not so good turned into something good, and then something good turned into something very good. How did it happen? Take us through this.
You know, I would say that there was two very serious periods in this relationship. That first was in the in the end of 50s and 60s years, when it was a bad relationship between Khrushchev and Mao.
Why? Why did they hate each other?
You know, this is very different things. Mostly, certainly, it's that Khrushchev was not as popular as Stalin was in China. Stalin, even now, is very popular in China. And even Khrushchev gifted the nuclear weapon to China, but they don't respect him for this.
Was it because of the Kennedy Accords, maybe? Backing down during the Cuban Missile Crisis, or weakness?
Maybe. But anyway, this relationship was very cold. And another period which was also very bad for our relationship, that was when Soviet Union ruined in 1991.
Yeah.
Because
the collapse.
Yes. And this was very important for Chinese communists because they try to understand the reasons for it, and they are studying these reasons very much. They have all the special institute which are researching these reasons for why was Soviet Union collapsed. So that was also very important. But now we feel the same relationship as it was many years ago. I mean, beginning from the 20th century, from the very beginning. Maybe you know that the sixth Congress of Communist Party of China was held in Moscow region.
Interesting.
Historically, can you imagine that it was only one Congress which was outside of China because Communist Party was forbidden that particular period in China?
You know, and I want to ask you about something you just said. I get a sense that the Chinese have held on to their socialist traditions. The Russians kind of gave up on their socialist traditions after 1991 and basically bent over for the West. And I can understand why China would have looked at Russia and said, you guys are quitters. You're quitting.
Yeah,
you shouldn't quit. Now, by the way, the Russia of today still has socialist traditions.
Yes.
Although it also has the capitalist traditions. And guess what? So does China.
A little bit different, but hope that more and more closer that period, which was as the Soviet Union's period. When I'm talking with my Chinese friends, they are really surprised when they say, you know, guys, you are so strange. Why you are making this choice? You want to go to Western way or you want to go Chinese way? We, China, went your way, Soviet way. So please keep this way and everything would be okay. Now we again understand this. We understand what is happening in the world, why the capitalist is keeping still the hegemonism and state on this hegemonism. And this new declaration, which is from Beijing today, that Russia and China are against hegemonism and are for the multipolar order.
Yeah, and in fact, let's talk a little bit about something that I'm looking forward to asking you about. I mentioned a little while ago when I was talking to Don Corder that I was so looking forward to talking to you because I wanted you to explain this to me. Gene, put up that video, if you have it, of those documents. Don Corder just told us that these guys, these two presidents, just signed 40 different declarations. Look at this. Look at this.
Yeah.
I mean, Sergei, 40 documents? Now, you don't just sign 40 documents because somebody took them out of their back pocket and put them on a table. Somebody had to have been working on this for so many years, and that's kind of important, isn't it?
Can you imagine what we have just see right now on our screens? This is every year. Every year the same, absolutely the same quality and quantity.
Really?
Of these documents, yes, sometimes maybe 20, 30, but every year we are signing a lot of documents which are absolutely in concrete in some projects and some very important declarations which we are declared together as two countries.
Now, Don said something interesting. I don't know if you were listening to him, but I thought this was really smart what he said. He said, the reason they're able to do this is because they have constant contact with each other and they trust each other.
Absolutely.
And there is a solidity to both governments. So it's not like Sergei and Rick agree on something today, but tomorrow Sergei's gone and Pepe comes in and he says, no, I don't like what Sergei did, so now the document is done. And that unfortunately happens. JCPOA is a perfect example of that, where the United States or some other Western country agrees to something, and then a new person is in office and they say, no, we don't agree to what he agreed to. That doesn't happen between China and Russia.
Absolutely right, you are, Rick. And you know what the reasons for such kind of relationship is. First of all, people-to-people connectivity, our real friendship between people. You know, I am, as vice chairman also of Association of Russian-Chinese Friendship Association. And our association is 69 years old. Next year, we will be 70 years old.
So yes.
That means that even in that bad periods when was, let us say, sophisticated ages for Russian-Chinese relationship, we still keep on our friendship and we provide all our people-to-people connectivity.
And
another thing, on the base of this P2P, we constructed very interesting mechanism of intergovernmental relationship. Can you imagine we have 5 intergovernmental commissions between Russia and China, headed by vice prime minister from the both sides? So it's unbelievable mechanism. No one, no any other pair of countries has such kind of mechanism of coordination, of making all necessary steps to be in contact together and work together for the whole agenda which we have today, you know, in the world.
You know, what you're describing is people who are very disciplined, who are very serious, as Mr. Lavrov always says. They're not serious, he always said. He told me when he was talking to me recently. He said, Rick, they're just not serious. And I think I know what he means, you know. It's like dot the I's, cross the T's, make sure that everything is correct, and then you have your two big guys sit down and talk about it. You just don't go in there.
Exactly.
I think this, you think. And here's another thing. The people working in these places, and I'm going to use yours as an example, because I just had Artyom, my assistant, I asked him today, send me, if you would, Sergei's resume. Just using you as an example. 1995, vice president of the New Century Association. 1998, chairman of the management board of the JCC Russian-Chinese Center for Trade. 2007, executive secretary of the Chinese-Russian Chamber of Trade Promotion. 2012-2014, assistant to the minister of the Russian Federation for the Far East and International Relations. 2015. I could go on. But it's not like...
Is everything about me?
This is you. This is you I'm reading about. It's not like yesterday, because you gave a lot of money to Mr. Putin as a donor, or you play golf with him. He said, hey, do me a favor, Sergei. Go talk to the Chinese. You've been studying this, looking at this, doing this for 30 years.
Absolutely right. Exactly.
That makes a difference.
Yes, big difference. And that's why we are talking that we are keeping this relationship, and we know exactly what we are doing together with Chinese people.
Yeah, that's kind of why it works. When you do things carefully, when you dot the I's, when you cross the T's, when you're disciplined, when you care, and when you develop relationships, you get better results.
Yes, absolutely right. And you know what also I would like to mention is that we are on the people-to-people connectivity, heart-to-heart working. This is very important.
You mean you like each other?
Yes, we really understand each other, and we really like each other.
What about when you disagree? There's got to be moments when...
Oh, yes, you know, it's very, very difficult to negotiate with Chinese people. But, you know, they respect people who negotiate with them. They don't respect people who agree with them. Can you imagine this?
Really?
Yes, absolutely, exactly. By the way, this is also the reason about Khrushchev and Stalin. Stalin didn't agree with them. That's why here they respect him.
Yeah.
But Khrushchev says everything, yes, they doesn't respect.
Why? So. It seemed to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seemed to me like my president, Mr. Trump, did not get good results in his meeting with China. Is that your opinion as well? And why? He looked like he was lost.
Maybe he has wrong... a wrong understanding of the aims, why he is going there.
Yeah.
And by the way, I thought that Rubio is a specialist for China.
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. He is, he knows China because he is author of some books about China. I remember them. But now I am thinking that the expertise in Chinese and the competitiveness about China is very weak.
Yes.
Because if they thought that they will come to Beijing as a winners in Iran, and they would say, now, look, we are here because we are very strong, and now you should make everything whatever we will tell you. My God, it was big mistake. Big mistake. So he lost his war, exactly lost, because once he changed the schedule of the visit, he postponed his visit later. So, another way, no, not another way to postpone again.
Yeah.
And he went there and he said, oh, you are great, Chairman Xi, you are great. I'm honest. I'm always honest. You are very great. So, that was only things what he said. And certainly nothing about Taiwan, because Taiwan is absolutely impossible to negotiate with China. China insists that this is the part of China, and no way about talking about separatists or about supplying the weapons. So what was the purpose of
no, visit? Listen.
Make deal?
And you have to go into a negotiation at all times knowing whether you have the upper hand, a little bit of the upper hand, equal, or maybe you are you have no leverage at all. You have to know this. And it seemed like the president went in with a plan originally set where they would have leverage, where they would say to Xi, look what we did in Iran. Aren't we incredible? We just defeated the Iranian army, and we now own all the oil
we
in Iran.
We changed the power in
Iran. But instead, that didn't happen, but he still went. And it was disjointed in that way. Like, what are you bragging about?
The difference in position between U.S. and China, between U.S.-Chinese relationship and China-Russian relationship, is that we are talking about equal stability and respectful dialogue. But U.S. cannot stand this. It's against interests of U.S. The U.S. can only insist on hegemonism. If not hegemonism, then no U.S. No financial system, and the dollar will ruin, etc., etc. So they should insist always on their leadership of the world. But the world is against of this.
Mr. Putin spoke about using a currency in the future, and now, in fact, I think I heard him say, correct me if I'm wrong, I was following this all day long, but I've been busy putting the other news together, that all deals between China and Russia will henceforth be done in rubles and yuan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We
so no more dollar.
No more dollar. We already done this. We already know. We finished with dollars counting between Russia and China. By the way,
wow,
we start this process in 2008. Can you imagine? 18 years ago, we begin.
Why does it take so long to do it?
Because it's not as simple. It's banking. It's banking, and it's very serious process. But we have done it. We have done it because we made it very, very far ago.
Can we make some news here? And if I ask you this question, the way you make news is to say to respond in the affirmative, to say yes. Okay, Russia and China have agreed to only use the ruble and the yuan. What about you going to India and going to other countries, Asian countries, and saying, let's all do this? And what are the chances that you could get them to go along?
We already done this. So, you know, I will tell you a very simple example. For example, between this triangle, China, Russia, and India. India is going to supply sugar, for example, to China's market, but they have difficulties between each other, and they have difficulties also in payments. But Russia can buy this sugar in India on rupees, then deliver to China and get yuan to buy Chinese goods and bring Russia and has rubles and pay to the owners of rupees, which are a lot of them in Russian Federation as a company who are exporting. So this is very simple. But this is the idea of what we are doing in the new Bank of Development in Shanghai, which is also known as a BRICS.
Right, right.
So we don't need dollar as a is the goal, value of payment.
Is the goal de-dollarization, and how soon might something like that actually happen amongst all the BRICS countries?
It's very sophisticated process because all the countries has their own value of economy. And everything should be taken into consideration. So this is not very simple like this, you know, let's take it from tomorrow. But now it's much easier because this is not gold system. We can now make also the digital currency. And digital currency also is possible as an information about the currency. And then we can make the special value, which will be rated every day in this bank, for example. So we can make it as a payment system for the whole countries of BRICS countries.
I have to ask you this then, because since we're talking about this, we have to talk about the petrodollar. What is happening right now in the Persian Gulf, more significantly in the Strait of Hormuz, is that Iran is saying to all of these countries who are traversing through the Strait of Hormuz, if you want a pass, you pay in yuan, or you pay in riyal, or you pay in something other than the dollar. Otherwise, we're not letting you go through. How big is that?
If we are talking about the new order, a new economical order, which will be most closer to BRICS than G7, then we say that Hormuz Gulf will be free. No payments. That is the most important, because all these countries, which we call Global South, and which are now the exactly certainly leading by Russia and China, and now we have the special declaration about this. So all these countries now are the global majority of the world. Hmm. So I think that minority should hear the majority and make whatever we say.
It's just so fascinating to watch the way this has developed. And we understand that there was a there were some comments made about a memorandum that was signed. I think we have that now. I want to share this with you and get your reaction as well. Here it is.
All states and their associations are free to choose their foreign partners and models of international cooperation. Global hegemony is unacceptable and must be prohibited. Rules developed within a narrow circle of states must not replace universally recognized international law. The use of human rights as a pretext for interference in the internal affairs of other states must be resolutely opposed.
I didn't hear or see the words United States there, but it was pretty clear what they were talking about or who they were talking about. Am I right?
And certainly, we always mentioned that our friendship between Russia and China is not against any country of the world. So certainly, that's why the reason we haven't mentioned U.S. in this declaration. But we understand who is their real provocator of this world.
Yeah, and... it's funny because I think I heard in the comments both from Mr. Xi and Mr. Putin that they seem to be saying, we know that the only way we can be against this hegemonic system, which we think is cruel, is for us to come closer and closer together.
Absolutely right.
In other words, if the you would think if there is a hegemonic system out there, that hegemonic system would love nothing more than to... draw China or separate China and Russia somehow, to decouple them.
Yes.
I think China and Russia know that that's why they can't decouple.
That is one of my works in the Center of Asia-Pacific Research Center. And we certainly study very deeply and very attentively the all measures which U.S. are making for, to decouple Russia and China. They spent a lot of money for this aim. And even now, you can see a lot of articles, a lot of provocations, and certainly the also the some views that Russian and Chinese relationship is not as strong as they as we think. Who is the oldest brother? Oh, very interesting question. Which are they especially? Who is your eldest brother in your couple, huh? Well, we always answer 50-50.
We're twins.
Yeah, we're twins.
We're born in the same day, as a matter of fact. Yeah,
because, you know, 50-50 is very good for you as the understandable thing. So that's what we say, 50-50.
Let me ask you this question that just came to my mind. How similar is the fact that the West, the United States in this case, is arming Taiwan because they want Taiwan to be in an aggressive stance against China, just as the West, the United States, has armed Ukraine because they wanted Ukraine to be in an aggressive stance against Russia. Are those two stories similar in many ways?
Very, very much, very much. I think this scenario is made in the same rooms of Langley, because you know, as they...
The same analyst sitting there writing.
Yes, certainly we can say that they made some success in the history of Ukraine for themselves, certainly, and made from Ukraine the project anti-Russia. But this is not, but they are making the same with Taiwan. But it's not impossible because Taiwan is the part of China. Ukraine was not a part of Russia. There were different countries, unfortunately, from 1991. This was different countries and they have inter-state relationship. There is no interstate relationship between China and Taiwan. This is part of one country. Two systems, but one country. That's what they say.
Yeah.
So the idea that China mainland, I mean Beijing, will involve to Taiwan is absolutely crazy and silly. This is not impossible. They are not going to make it military way. Mm. They are doing it just very ecumenical way and developing economy, developing tourism, developing culture and everything. They have a lot of flights between Taipei and Beijing, and people, crowds of people are making these trips to both sides. So this is not possible. If they insist on separating, for example, some politics, and, for example, U.S. will join to these separatic movements, then will be some casus belli for China, but not earlier.
Final question. I have a guest on the other day, Ray McGovern, brilliant guy. I'm sure you know Ray. Mm-hmm. He was a CIA analyst, and he used to debrief the president of the United States. He debriefed, by the way, with presidential briefings, President Ronald Reagan. And he suggested to me that he believes that one of the things that Mr. Putin talked about behind closed doors with Mr. Xi was about what Russia is going to now need to do in Ukraine to finally settle that situation. And he just wanted Mr. Xi to be comfortable with it. I don't know what Mr. Putin's going to do. I'm not privy to what military actions Russia is going to take. But would it not surprise you if that was one of the things that was discussed with Mr. Xi? And what would Mr. Xi's reaction be? Is he understanding of Russia's needs militarily in Ukraine?
For these 4 years, during this special military operation in Ukraine, I've never heard that Russian or some representative of Russia ask something to China to help. Help us, please, something this. Yeah. We always say we don't need any help. We do it ourselves. But sometimes they have very interesting offers for us. Certainly we use them. I certainly cannot describe all these things in air, but we do it.
Nobody's watching if you want to tell me.
Yes, certainly. Certainly nobody's watching. Certainly we do everything in a very nice way, and we keep silent for this. We make payments, and no U.S. Financial system can see them because we keep silent. So everything is okay between Russia and China on this side.
Huh.
But I don't think that...
So she knows and she is
everything.
Comfortable.
Yes. And Chinese government knows everything. And I don't think that Putin needs to ask something about this topic to Mr. Xi.
So she is all in on Ukraine.
Absolutely right.
Wow. What a great guest. I really like you. I have enjoyed... putting our makeup together in the dressing room, and now we're out here talking, and I feel like I've known you for a long time.
Yes, so, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're just a great guy. Thank you so much. And you're so knowledgeable. I mean, you're the expert when it comes to Russia-China relations, and you were kind enough to come out here and share your wisdom with us. That's very nice.
Thank you very much.
That's very nice.
Thank you for your invitation.
No, thank you. And thank you at home for being with us once again. You know, we feel strongly about the opportunity to be able to share openly. As you can see, there's no notes. He didn't come prepared. We're just sharing ideas about things that we think you should know about. That's freedom. That's real freedom of speech. Nobody's controlling anything here. So we want to thank you for being a part of this. And please let us know what you think. I saw millions of you yesterday were involved in social media after we did the coverage. I imagine you're going to be there again after watching what we did today on X, on Spotify, on YouTube, on BitChute. Thanks again. And really, thank you so much for letting us into your homes. We'll look for you next time. I'm Rick Sanchez. Adios.